Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. It has been more than 3 months since the Israeli genocide on Gaza has been taking place, from bombs falling on their heads to being ordered to move from place to place without any fuel to not having enough food or water. Gazans literally live in hell. Now the majority of the 2.5 million Palestinians are internally displaced and living in tents. Residents feel that any moment could be their last one alive as the Israeli regime continues to indiscriminately hit anywhere from homes to hospitals to UN-run schools. Nowhere is sacred and no one is safe. Well, with this backdrop, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken calls on the Israeli regime to do more to protect civilians in Gaza. Well, I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Daniel McAdams, Executive Director of Ron Paul Institute out of Lake Jackson, Texas. Glenn Dyson, Professor of Political Science, University of Southeastern Norway out of Oslo. Thank you both for being with me. Well, let's start this off in Texas. Daniel, I'd like to hear your thoughts on the U.S. Secretary of State currently calling for the Israeli regime to do more to protect civilians in Gaza. I mean, what exactly does that mean?
Well, what is this, his fourth trip? What have they had to show for it? Absolutely nothing. At this point, do more to protect civilians. Well, they've already completely destroyed the civilian infrastructure, the 23,000 plus civilians who've been slaughtered. Now, that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Daniel, I'm so sorry. I'm going to interrupt you because I'm having some audio difficulties. Hopefully, we can take care of that, and I'll come back to you. So sorry. Glenn, I'll propose that same question then to you. What exactly does the U.S. Secretary of State means when he says that?
Well, I would agree with the former account of it. I think that it's very little, very late, because Gaza has been completely leveled. They destroyed the entire Gaza Strip. Thousands of civilians, the majority of dead are women and children. So the Israelis have already razed Gaza to the ground, and to now call for restraint, not only is it late, but it also seems somewhat disingenuous, because this is not just the United States as a third party giving recommendations or trying to pressure Israel. This is also an American war on Palestine, because it's Americans who provides the finance, it's the Americans who provides the weapons. So if the Americans wanted this war to be over, they could do it by tomorrow by simply cutting off the Israelis. So they do have a huge leverage to put pressure on Israel. But again, this is not what they're doing. I think they want to have it both ways. They would like to provide their full support to Israel to destroy Gaza, and at the same time they want to pretend as if they abide by human rights and that they're concerned for the death of civilians. So it doesn't seem very serious. I think it's a way of warming up or trying to get on the good side of various Arab leaders, among the Gulf states, as Blinken is going on a tour to try to win some sympathy and win these leaders over. So I wouldn't see it being more serious than this, than a marketing campaign.
Okay. Well, Daniel, hopefully the audio is better. Now, far too many innocent Palestinians have already been killed. So this is according to Blinken. What an amazing discovery after at least 23,000 people have been murdered in Gaza and more than 3 months have passed. I mean, why does he make such a statement like, far too many innocent Palestinians have been killed? I mean, what does that mean, unless you're actually trying to stop the killing?
Well, they've been killed with American weapons and American money, so he should know better than anyone how many have been killed. I mean, the man is a complete empty suit. He's got dead eyes. In Doha, just before he was traveling to Israel, he said that the U.S. conditions all military aid on strict adherence to international and humanitarian law. I mean, he said something like that with a straight face. And the 30-some thousand people that have been killed, as I started off saying before we had the problem, that's just the tip of the iceberg. Because as we know, many times that number are going to die after you've just completely destroyed the infrastructure. There's no medicine left. There's no shelter. There's no food. So there'll be many, many times more. So for him to say now that, well, try to, if you can you please try to curtail the killing? They've already put things, they've already put the measures in place to kill far, far more more people.
And let me just stay with you, Daniel. When we look at that situation, you said they've already put the measures in place to kill far more people. What is it that the United States is getting out of this? Why does it give this blind support to Israel?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, a Biden administration, now let's not forget, this is a dysfunctional administration, but also let's remember that support for Israel is bipartisan. It is the most bipartisan thing in Washington, D.C. It is the one thing that both parties, with very few exceptions, can agree on, which is a blind support for Israel and a disregard for actual U.S. national interests, which aren't in supporting Israel by any stretch of the imagination. There really is nothing in it for the administration, but President Biden set the stage initially after the October 7 situation, where he flew over to Israel and basically gave them the green light to do anything they wanted. We're not going to put any brakes on you. You can do whatever we want, whatever you want. And by the way, here's the money and weapons to do so. Even bypassed Congress twice now to send more weapons to Israel illegally without congressional approval. So it's a knee-jerk reaction. But the interesting thing development here is that something very different has happened, which is that public opinion in the United States for once is not going along with the leadership. Now, recent polls have showed that barely half of Americans, and that includes Republicans and evangelical Christians, barely half of Americans support aid to Israel. That's the first time in history. So something is shifting in the United States, and it's very, very important.
All right, crossing back over now to Oslo and Glenn. I mean, since the start of this onslaught in October, we've seen many officials worldwide talking about the inhumanity taking place in Gaza during the war on kids, but not really any international organizations nor countries, for that matter, that have been able to bring this war to an end. Why not?
Well, I don't think there has been any real desire or any real effort. I mean, even a call for a ceasefire hasn't been done. I think what really happened is over the past decades, the U.S. and its partners have always been almost on autopilot to provide unconditional support for Israel. And of course, on the 7th of October, when Hamas sprung this attack in which civilians were killed, I think there was this immediate instinct to, again, provide full unconditional support for Israel. And again, Israel could do no wrong. This was effectively the argument from the leaders. And then, of course, the Israeli began to, well, what many saw as taking advantage of this by effectively carrying out an operation of ethnic cleansing to, well, remove the Palestinians from Gaza, either, you know, kill them or drive them off the land. And they're already talking about annexing the region. So once it went from bad to worse, I think it was difficult for many Western leaders to walk this back in terms of taking a more critical position. But I think as this becomes evident, it's not just ethnic cleansing, it's also genocide. I think more leaders are now feeling that they have to at least take a rhetorical, critical view in which they criticize the excessive use of violence, but still commit themselves to the usual slogans that, you know, Israel has a right to exist without specifying within what borders, for example. So I think this is the direction that they're taking it. So again, Provide some verbal criticism for Israel while not actually doing anything to stop the bloodshed.
Right, right. Well, Daniel, after everything that the Israeli regime has done and is doing, what are your thoughts on the comments made by the French foreign minister, who said that Iran and its affiliates must stop destabilizing acts which could spark a broader conflict in the Middle East?
Well, projection is the one unified Western foreign policy. Always accuse others of what you're doing, hence the endless accusations that Putin invaded Ukraine and is attacking Ukraine when, in fact, it was Ukraine attacking Russians in eastern Ukraine for so many years. And this is the situation, you know, in the U.S., a failure of diplomacy is a failure to objectively understand the world as it is, not as you wish it were. And that's the problem with the neocons and neoconservatives who run Washington. They don't see the world in a realistic way. They see it as they wish it were. And so they completely fail to understand or to take into account the domestic considerations within Israel. Now, Netanyahu has been facing for years extreme pressure from both sides. He's been an enormous amount of legal pressure, legal problems that have amounted. There are about thousands and thousands of people demonstrating in front of his residence every day that's never reported in the Western media. And so October 7th seemed to me to be a very convenient way for him to appease the radical settlers on the right, who really, and they have been completely open. I'm not conjuring this out of thin air. They are looking for a final solution to the Palestinian problem. And in different varying ways of saying that, there have been several Israeli politicians who've overtly said that. And even Netanyahu himself has said, we need to resettle Palestinians outside of Palestine. So it's the most open and I would almost say honest incidents of ethnic cleansing we've seen in many, many decades.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, Blinken also said while he was in the region that Palestinians must be allowed to return to their homes after the war and must not be displaced from Gaza. This as Israeli regime officials, as Daniel just pointed out, continue to make inflammatory and genocidal statements about the removal of the majority of Gaza's population. Let's talk about these different perspectives that are given off publicly. What does it mean when the U.S. is saying this, Israel is saying this? Do you think there really is a difference of opinion, or how do you assess that?
I think it's a different way of framing it or marketing oneself, because you're correct. There's very contradictory message. On one hand, the Israelis are very openly stating that, you know, they want, again, more or less a final solution. They don't want to have the Palestinians there anymore. Meanwhile, the United States is arguing that, you know, they're not deliberately targeting civilians. So there's obviously a disconnect. And in terms of, you know, we see the same with expanding the war. They, you know, the Americans are warning, the war might expand, like there's some third party. But again, they're the one participating in the genocide. They're assisting and supporting striking Lebanon, striking Yemen, striking Iraq, Syria, and most likely behind this terrorist attack in Iran as well. So it's just it's very strange, the rhetoric. It doesn't seem to coincide with the actions that are being taken. So I don't see much that much difference on the European side either. I think they would like to try to maintain some of the humanitarian image and reputation, but still, I don't think that will translate into any various restrictions on Israel or actually putting pressure.
Well, speaking of the European side, the Italian foreign minister, Daniel, has said that G7 major powers are working with Israel to secure a rapid end to its devastating war in Gaza and to reduce civilian casualties. I mean, what are your thoughts on this statement and the use of the word rapid when it has already been more than 3 months since the start of this genocide?
Yeah, you're closing the barn door when the horses are already out is essentially what they're doing. I think the professor makes a great point. They're trying to save face now at this point when the damage has already been done. They're going to go back to their homes. What homes are they going to go back to? Anyone who bothers to have a look at what it looks like in Gaza right now and understand there's no issue of going back to the homes. And forget about just the physical buildings. The infrastructure is completely destroyed. Water, sanitation. We've seen horrific pictures of raw sewage in the streets in Gaza. It's a complete disaster and impossible to go back to. But, you know, I would point out there is kind of a schizophrenia, and the professor, again, makes a great point, which is that on the one hand, the U.S. is escalating and encouraging the escalation of this. On the other hand, they're telling Israel, don't escalate. You know, there was a fascinating article in the Washington Post yesterday, and we should read the Washington Post like the Soviet citizens read Pravda in the old days, which is you're seeing what the deep state wants you to think. And it's a fascinating piece talking about the dangers of escalation. And I think it's the deep state trying to find a way out of this. And they highlight, for example, a Defense Intelligence Agency investigation showing that if Israel expands the war completely against Hezbollah in the north, it may not survive. It may not win. And the losses could be, I think the number was 300,000 to 500,000 on both sides for a massive war. So they're clearly looking for a way out of this, while at the same time, what kinds of sticks do they have? Blinken only comes with carrots. Here's more money. Please stop killing Palestinians. No, we want to keep doing it. Thanks very much. Can you please send us more money? Okay, here's more money and weapons. This is an absolute complete failure. I've never seen such incompetence in diplomacy, probably in the history of the world.
Is it incompetence, though, Daniel? Is it incompetence, or has it been created to do exactly what it's doing? On the one hand, to show, as the professor said, that they actually really want to end this conflict, but at the same time continuing and allowing the conflict to go on.
Well, there's no peace camp in Washington, D.C. Now, Americans, as I mentioned earlier, are not in favor of continuing or escalating support for Israel, particularly and interestingly enough, when you look at younger Americans who don't have the same baggage. The support for Israel is much, much lower among young Americans. You see a lot more protests, hence the crackdowns on free speech in the U.S. universities that we've seen. But absolutely, Washington, D.C. is walking lockstep. And if Biden does anything to de-escalate, well, he'll have the Republicans on his back saying, Biden is showing weakness in the Middle East. Why aren't we bombing Yemen already? Why aren't we bombing Iran? They're going to go Lindsey Graham on everyone if Biden even does show some diplomacy. So I grant that to you. That's a very, very, very good point. Crocodile tears are being cried, I think.
Well, Glenn, do you think that these Western countries or Western regimes have totally discredited themselves since this genocide has started? Your assessment of that, whether we're talking about the United States, we start off with the United States, or we look at the UK and we look at the other European powers and what they have said and what they have done, and then to see that this genocide is continuing. Your assessment?
No, I think definitely, and this is something that's recognized in the Western media as well, which is that the Americans and Europeans have been really, over the past 2 years, been lobbying the global south very heavy to portray the Russians as these evil imperialists, while the West, you know, we stand on the side of, you know, human rights and decency and human dignity. And then, again, this is also based on a false narrative, of course. But then we have this war now against the Palestinians, and it's all thrown away. We have our leaders watching and enabling a genocide happening, and we can't even ask for a ceasefire. And so I think it's some of it is caused by simply blind loyalty to the United States for the Europeans, because 2 years ago there might have been more opposition, but these days, especially after 2 years of having a war in Europe, the Europeans have become completely obedient to the United States, and the U.S. no longer prioritizes own national interest above serving Israel. So there's something very, very irrational which is happening, because it's very hard for me to even understand how this is in the U.S. interest to alienate themselves among all these countries in the Middle East, and, you know, set Israel in this position when it's effectively go to war against everyone. One of the strengths of Israel has always been to isolate all the other ones, pin the regional actors against each other, and then target one state. But what's happening now, it doesn't make any sense. Even if you would want to exterminate the Palestinians, this seems to be a very strange way to go about it. So it's for me, it's very, very rational what's happening.
Daniel, how do you see this playing itself out? On the one hand, Glenn just said that basically the U.S. are actually having policies that it's not in the national interest. You talked about the growing number of young people who actually are against the Israeli regime. But at the same time, this genocide is continuing. Your assessment of this, do you think that they want to just continue basically just wearing down the Palestinians and that this will be extended? Or how do you see it playing out at this point in time?
Well, probably they're counting on fatigue among Americans who are tired of seeing, if they've seen any suffering Palestinians, they'll be tired. And we have a very low, very short attention span in the U.S. When Zelensky was the flavor of the month, we all wanted to, not me, but America wanted to wear Ukrainian flags, you know, and then they dropped them as quickly as they could when he was no longer the flavor of the month. But I think in terms of how do I see it playing out, I think one of the things we're not reading about, and this was reported earlier today, which is that the Israeli government announced in advance of Blinken's arrival another very large drawdown of its troops from Gaza. And I think that can mean one of a couple of things. First of all, and it's not being reported, which is that the Israelis have been very good at killing unarmed civilians, but they've not been as competent in fighting Hamas fighters. And that is a fact. You're looking at, I mean, I've seen hundreds of videos of Hamas fighters using essentially homemade RPG weapons to blow up Israeli tanks. Apparently, there have been thousands of casualties in terms of dead and severely wounded that have been admitted by the Defense Ministry of Israel. So you have Israel actually going toe-to-toe with a Hamas that is adept at urban warfare, and they have been gifted by the IDF so many firing positions by the blowing up of Gaza. These guys can hide anywhere. The Israeli soldiers have said, we're fighting ghosts here. It's not going well for the Israeli military on the ground. And the Israeli economy, remember, these are hundreds of thousands of people that have been conscripted that normally would be driving buses or whatever they do there. They're not doing that. The economy is in shambles. These guys are getting killed. And now they're looking for a way out, I think. But one of the ways out may be to expand the war to Lebanon with the understanding that the U.S. will back Israel up.
We have to continue this hopefully another time, but we are out of time. I appreciate both of you being with me, Glenn Dyson, professor of political science, University of Southeastern Norway, out of Oslo, and Daniel McAdams, executive director, Ron Paul Institute of Lake Jackson, Texas. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing off for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll have a look at the verses of chapter Nur, the 24th chapter of the Holy Quran, and different commentary points of these verses. Dear listeners, we have reached the 61st verse of the chapter. Now let's listen to this verse.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. ليس على الأعمى حرج ولا على الأعرج حرج ولا على المريض حرج ولا على أنفسكم أن تأكلوا من بيوتكم أو بيوت آبائكم أو بيوت أمهاتكم أو بيوت إخوانكم أو بيوت أخواتكم أو بيوت أعمامكم أو بيوت أعمامكم أو بيوت عماتكم أو بيوت أخوالكم أو بيوت خالاتكم أو بيوت خالاتكم أو ما ملكتم مفاتحه أو صديقكم ليس عليكم جناح أن تأكلوا جميعا أو أشتاتا فإذا دخلتم بيوتا فسلموا على أنفسكم تحية من عند الله مباركة طيبة كذلك يبين الله لكم الآيات لعلكم تعقلون.
There is not upon the blind any guilt, nor upon the lame any guilt, nor upon the ill any guilt, nor upon yourselves if you eat from your own houses, or the houses of your fathers, or the houses of your mothers, or the houses of your brothers, or the houses of your sisters, or the houses of your father's brothers, or the houses of your father's sisters, or the houses of your mother's brothers, or the houses of your mother's sisters, or from houses whose keys you possess, or from the house of your friend. There is no blame upon you whether you eat together or separately. But when you enter houses, give greetings of peace upon each other, a greeting from Allah, blessed and good. Thus does Allah make clear to you the verses of ordinance, that you may understand.
So, we said that the previous verses talked about taking permission at certain times or when entering special places of parents. Now, this verse, the concerned verse, is in fact an exception from this ordinance. And the verse indicates that a group can enter their relatives' homes and the like, some of the people, on some conditions they can go there and use their food, even eat food, without having their permission. So the Quran adds, after the previously discussed issues, that there is not any blame on yourselves if you eat from these houses without permission. So the verse continues, أَن تَأْكُلُوا مِن بُيُوتِكُمْ أَوْ بُيُوتِ آبَائِكُمْ. From your houses, to eat without permission, it is lawful for you. The objective is the children and wives which have been rendered into your houses. And the verse after that also continues. The houses of your fathers, أو بيوت آبائكم, أو بيوت أمهاتكم, or the houses of your mothers, أو بيوت إخوانكم, or the houses of your brothers, أو بيوت أخواتكم, or the houses of your sisters, أو بيوت أعمامكم, or the houses of your father's brothers, أو بيوت عماتكم, or the houses of your father's sisters, أو بيوت أخوالكم, أو بيوت خالاتكم, or the houses of your mother's brothers, or the houses of your mother's sisters. أو ما ملكتم مفاتيحه أو صديقكم, or from that whereof you hold the keys, or from the houses of your friend. ليس عليكم جناح أن تأكلوا جميعا أو أشتاتا. No sin shall be for you whether you eat together or apart. It seems that at the advent of Islam, some Muslims avoided eating food lonely, and if they could not find anyone as company for eating food, they would remain hungry for a time. Then the Quran taught them that eating lonely or with others is lawful, and there is no difference between the two. However, eating with the others is better, but it is also lawful to eat alone. Some commentators have also said that some Arabs believed that, as a respect, the food of their guest must be served separately, and they ought not to be with him during eating food, lest the guest might become shy or feel uneasy. And this verse removed these considerations. This verse taught them that this was not an admirable custom. على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا. We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
Another group of commentators, dear listeners, regarding the verse have said that some people at the beginning of Islam believed that the poor must not eat with the rich, and class division must be observed even at the time of eating food. And the Holy Quran explicitly rejected this wrong and unjust custom with this sentence. There is no problem if this verse refers to all these mentioned commentaries. Then the verse refers to another ethical matter, and it says, "But when you enter houses, salute one another with a greeting from Allah, blessed and good. فَإِذَا دَخَلْتُمْ بُيُوتًا فَسَلِّمُوا عَلَىٰ أَنفُسِكُمْ تَحِيَّةً مِّنْ عِنْدِ اللَّهِ مُبَارَكَةً طَيِّبَةً كَذَلِكَ يُبَيِّنُ اللَّهُ لَكُمُ الْآيَاتِ لَعَلَّكُمْ تَعْقِلُونَ So, that which houses are the purpose of the Quranic word buyut, some say that it refers to 11 houses that are mentioned in above. Some others, however, say that this buyut is referring specially to mosques. But as it seems clear, the verse is unconditional. It embraces all houses, and including those 11 ones that were mentioned above, or even other houses, such as friends' houses, relatives' houses, and so on. Because there is no reason for limiting the vast concept of this verse.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Things always worked for me, worry ends when faith begins.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Illinois Senator Dick Durbin has been called the oldest friend in Congress of AIPAC, the influential pro-Zionist lobbying committee. Protesters gathered outside his home to demand that the second highest ranking Democratic senator stop supporting Israel's latest war on Gaza. But then activists grew tired of being ignored. Protesters crossed from Senator Durbin's high-class residence onto historic Lakeshore Drive along Lake Michigan. Traffic is shut down in both directions on the most important road in the city in a rare and powerful example of local political activism. Protesters told angry motorists that the person they should be blaming was Senator Durbin.
Senator Dick Durbin actually represents the biggest Palestinian constituent population in the United States. He has a duty to be on the front lines of calling for a ceasefire in Gaza.
When police refused to release one of two activists arrested, protesters refused to move for hours.
This is not a religious issue. It's not a political issue. It's a humanitarian crisis. It's an issue that is affecting everybody in the world, or most people, and everybody wants a resolution. So we hope for a peaceful resolution. That's why we're out here.
The Arab population in the United States is about half of the Jewish population, but Arab influence in American politics and culture is relatively non-existent. For over two decades, open discrimination has been constant, as are hypocritical double standards.
I was in Palestine on October 7th. So I've lived my whole life in America. I lived in Palestine for 4 years, but we came here and I grew up here. I was raised here. But I feel like my identity as an American is shattered anytime something happens. And I see that my American colleagues and classmates and friends all of a sudden turn a blind eye when it comes to Palestinian life. And it's very disappointing. And it's especially when you come back and you see that your own tax dollars are being put towards towards this genocide.
Since October 7th, public opinion has shifted massively against Israel, especially among young voters. That may embolden activists to try even more attention-demanding protests against Israel's atrocities and murder in Palestine. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
Shedding light on different aspects of the martyred commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani's illustrious career. Prominent political figures and academics gathered in Tehran to take part in the first international conference dubbed Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, Defender of Human Rights.
Western countries claim to be advocates of human rights, but they are the ones who created the Daesh terrorist group. On the other hand, it was General Soleimani who fought and defeated this terrorist group. He was the one fighting to bring back peace and stability in the region. In practice, he was the one defending human rights.
The resistance front that Haj Qasem created has done great service to Muslims. Americans created Daesh. They even supported the terrorist group in different ways. And this terrorist group was on a mission to tarnish the image of Muslims and Islam. But Haj Qasem confronted them, he fought against them, and defeated the terrorist group to show to the world that the true face of Islam is a religion that seeks peace as a fundamental right that all humans must enjoy.
Head of a special committee formed to follow up on General Soleimani's murder case from legal and international aspects explained that the legal proceedings are more than just a means of seeking justice.
These legal proceedings are an opportunity for international public opinion to familiarize itself with General Soleimani and to understand the true effects of foreign meddling in the region. This is not just an opportunity to seek justice for Haj Qasem, but also to enlighten people worldwide.
The speakers reiterated that the U.S. claims to be a staunch supporter of human rights. Yet the top commander, who defeated the notorious Daesh terrorist group in the region, who clearly violated the most basic human rights, was assassinated by the U.S. This reveals the true colors of American politicians as they use their version of human rights to advance their political agenda.
The participants of this conference believe that the assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani as an anti-terrorist icon in the region proves that the concept of human rights the way Western countries have defined it needs to be revised. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
On Saturday, a conference was held in the Nigerian capital commemorating slain Iranian General Qasem Soleimani on his fourth assassination anniversary. Experts at the conference discussed the brilliant performance of General Qasem Soleimani in fighting terrorism, oppression, and imperialism. They explained that General Soleimani and his Iraqi companion Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis made a huge impact on the global resistance movement, thereby saving humanity from the clutches of sponsors of terrorism like the USA and Israel. The experts noted that the Iranian general had endeavored to protect countries like Yemen, Syria, and Iraq in the face of threats from Daesh and Al-Qaeda.
He developed a lot of Qasem Soleimanis like him and has, motivated resistant praetors to produce more of his own kind. He has also made frameworks for resisting against any type of arrogance and imperialism.
The expert said Iran's alliance with Russia, its solid arms and advisory support to resistance fighters, and the country's pro-resistance diplomacy were part of the legacy of General Soleimani. They said General Soleimani made a leading role in projecting his power across the West Asia region. The experts also noted that the American occupiers in their region were always worried about General Soleimani and his men.
We are going to end their arrogance and colonialism in the Middle East, in the world. in the whole world. And he has achieved that because look, when you look at imperialism and colonialism, it's going down, both in the way in the Asia and in other parts of the world, because their strength has been weakened.
General Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis were martyred 4 years ago during a drone attack near the Baghdad airport, ordered by then-US President Donald Trump.
Meanwhile, members of the Islamic movement in Nigeria have strongly condemned the recent twin blasts that killed dozens in the Iranian southeastern city of Kerman during a ceremony commemorating the martyrdom of General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. They express hope that the perpetrators of the deadly attack will be brought to justice. Benjamin Abdullahi, Abuja.
As the Yemeni army's attacks against Israeli-linked vessels in the Red Sea continue, hundreds of thousands of people filled the streets of the capital Sana'a and other major cities to condemn the Israeli genocide against Palestinians. Protesters chanted slogans supporting the Palestinian resistance and hailing the Yemeni army's operations in the Red Sea.
We came out today to confirm our continued support for the Palestinian cause and Gaza in particular. We will not stop doing this, and we don't care about any alliances, as we are carrying out our religious and humanitarian duty. The Security Council was supposed to protect children and women and leave the siege on the Palestinians, but unfortunately it did not do so, and is even trying to prevent that.
In streets to support our brothers and our fathers in Gaza, and we will support all the people in Gaza with our blood, all the Yemeni people.
People here have also denounced the terrorist attack in the city of Kerman that claimed scores of lives. They said it reveals the Israelis' fear of martyr Soleimani even after his martyrdom.
Zionism is a criminal movement that has proven throughout its history to be linked to terrorism and criminality. There is no operation targeting the resistance without Zionism having a hand in it, whether through Daesh or other Zionist and American tools. We affirm that these blasts, with their ugliness, reveal the enemy's fear of martyr Soleimani even after his martyrdom. This criminal act will not discourage the resistance countries from continuing to confront the Israeli entity, but rather will push the people to unite against it.
Every Friday, people gather in the Asabain Square in Sana'a to reaffirm their full support for the Palestinians and the acts of resistance against the Israeli enemy.
Yemenis say they want their voices to be heard by the international community, which keeps turning a blind eye to Israeli brutal war crimes against Palestinians. They have also vowed to continue supporting Palestinians at all costs, even if they engage in a direct war with all Western powers. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
The Iranian embassy in Damascus held an official ceremony this Friday for the martyrs of the terrorist bombings in Kerman. The twin attacks killed and injured hundreds of civilians during the fourth assassination anniversary of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. The Iranian ambassador stressed that this heinous crime will not stop Iran from supporting the resistance in the region.
Iran and Syria stand united in the axis of resistance. We have the same cause. Such crimes will only strengthen our determination to continue on this path. Iran and Syria remain steadfast in following this path until achieving a decisive victory. Enemies will not gain any result through committing these crimes, even if they consider them a victory. It will lead them to defeat and failure.
As President Maduro and the Venezuelan foreign minister stated, Venezuela, Iran, and Syria share a common enemy against whom we are prevailing in this stage. We strongly condemn these cowardly attacks against free and independent Iranian people. We vehemently condemn this criminal act.
Syrian officials, parliament members, representatives from several resistance factions, and some other diplomats were in attendance. The mourners expressed their determination to gain victory over terrorism. Syria condemned this vicious act and expressed full trust in Iran's ability to overcome this agony and punish the perpetrators.
On behalf of the Syrian Arab Republic, we extend our deepest condolences and heartfelt sympathies to the Islamic Republic of Iran, its leadership, government, and people over this heinous and cowardly terrorist act that targeted innocent civilians in the city of Kerman. We support Iran in combating terrorism and punishing the perpetrators of this terrorist crime.
We are here to offer our heartfelt condolences to our brothers in the Islamic Republic of Iran over this tragic event. We are confident that this affliction will not hold the march of development, civilization, and advancement led by Ayatollah Khamenei in the Islamic Republic of Iran.
From this land, which is soaked with the blood of Syrian and Iranian martyrs, we want to tell our brothers and sisters in Kerman that our blood is the same and we suffer from similar tragedies, but our sacrifices unite us against terrorism and strengthen our resolve to defeat our common enemies. A similar ceremony was also held at the office of the representative of the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, in Damascus. Attendees condemned the terrorist attack, considering it a clear proof that the spirit of martyr Haj Qasem Soleimani is still alive through his legacy, frightening the terrorists and the enemies of the resistance front. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
United as always, Iranians gathered after Friday prayers in the capital, Tehran, to show their outrage at acts of terror in the country after scores of people were killed in bombings in Kerman. They say while it was Daesh which claimed responsibility for the terrorist attack, the U.S. and its regional ally Israel are actually behind these atrocities.
Daesh is created by the U.S. Former U.S. President Donald Trump once said that Obama was the founder of Daesh. They have caused disasters in the country for more than 40 years, but our people are still standing for the Islamic Revolution. Are they blind? How did they not see this?
Israel and the U.S. have a long history of hostility against the Iranian people. Wednesday terrorist attacks in Kerman were an obvious proof of that, as they've been supporting different terrorist groups, including Daesh, in the region.
Daesh?
Daesh couldn't do this by itself. It has a supporter. Their supporters are the U.S. and Israel.
Mothers were among those taking part in the rally. I asked them how they felt when they saw the dead bodies of innocent people as the attack occurred on Mother's Day in Iran.
There's no doubt that Israel and the U.S. were behind this horrific terrorist attack. It hurts every human being's feeling when on Mother's Day they see a mother killed while holding her baby.
During the rally, people also mourned for a 20-year-old girl named Faizeh Rahimi. Faizeh was a student who was killed in the attack. Iranian students of all ages were participating in the rally to show their support for martyrs like Faizeh.
Imam Khomeini once said, "Kill us, but our nation will become more awakened."
Western-backed terrorist attacks in Iran have mainly targeted popular backing for the Islamic Republic, but the people say they will continue to support the establishment and hold heroes like martyr Qasem Soleimani in their hearts. Farzan Ashuryan, Tehran.
Yemen has resumed its military operations in the Red Sea by targeting another Israeli-linked ship traveling to occupied Palestine. The latest attack comes just 2 days after a U.S. Navy helicopter killed 10 Yemeni naval soldiers while patrolling the Red Sea. The spokesman for Yemen's armed forces stated that the U.S. attacks did not and will not stop Yemen's military operations against Israeli ships until the genocide in Gaza ends.
The Yemeni armed forces confirmed that maritime shipping is open in the Red Sea and in the Arabian Sea to the entire world except for the ports in the occupied Palestine. We also confirmed that any acts of aggression from the U.S. will not pass by without punishment and retaliation. We also warned the American enemy and any other nation of transgression by protecting any shipments heading to the Israeli entity.
The Yemeni public has praised the army's military efforts against Israel.
Today we targeted an Israeli ship because they are prohibited from the Red Sea. We will eventually march into occupied Palestine so we can get revenge for all the martyrs. America will not be able to protect Israel. We will continue to target them.
Although the U.S. and other Western nations have urged the Yemeni government to end its continuous military operations in the Red Sea, many Yemenis believe that the blockade of Israeli shipments should continue until the genocide in Palestine.
We prepare for jihad against the enemies from land, air, and sea. We've already endured 10 years of war, blockade, and all types of struggles. Therefore, the time has come for us to retaliate because their blood is not worth more than ours, or the blood of a Palestinian child who is dying of hunger and being burned by Israeli bombs and missiles. Therefore, retaliation is coming.
What is clear is that the U.S. will continue to support Israel, even if it means starting another war in West Asia. Yemen's Ansarullah movement had previously stated they are ready to take America on directly. Yemen has vowed to retaliate against the U.S. military presence in the Red Sea for the killing of the 10 Navy Yemeni personnel. They have also vowed to continue to target Israeli-linked ships and the ships of any nation that joins the U.S. in its hostile actions against Yemen. Yusuf Mawdi, Sana'a.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Answering it down some questions and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah هو إذا الرحمن
Allah
هو إذا المنان
لا إله إلا. Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. We welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I am Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio, we have Brother Suhail to answer today's questions. Assalamu alaikum, brother. Welcome to the show.
Alaikum salam. Thank you for having me.
Okay, Brother Suhail, for today's discussion, we want to talk about the concept of sin and the sinning. Is thinking about sinning a sin or not?
Before we enter whether thinking about sin, deciding to do it and not being able to do it, a sin in itself or not. Mm-hmm. Before entering that, we need to understand what is the reality of sin in general before we enter this phase, whether it's a sin or not. So the reality of sin, which in Arabic refers to ithm or isyan,
yes,
means to disobey the order of the master and to slip in complying with his wishes. You see? So this is the meaning of sin. According to riwayat, we know that sin is a snare of Satan. The inner reality of a sin is fire, while the outside of it deceives the individual by fleeting sense of pleasures in temptation of which the oblivious human being incurs divine chastisement, means the fire of hell. The effects of sin, what does it affect? Entails harmful consequences for the individual as well as for the society at large. Its consequences for the individual are, among others, darkening and hardening one's heart, depriving the sinner of knowledge of divine mercy from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, divine secrets. So a person who has a spot of sin in his heart, he will never achieve a higher status in this manner. He has to ask for forgiveness.
Yes.
The cause of sin, why do people commit sin? The religious authorities arraign ignorance and obliviousness as the main causes of it. Not knowing about something can cause someone to sin. And the last one is the way of salvation. One is repentance, to ask for forgiveness, reminding oneself of Allah, remembrance, a resolved will. If there's anything you want to resolve, you want to ask for forgiveness. These are the main concepts of how we can get ourselves away from sinning. Now we come to the main question. Is the intention of sinning or just thinking about it, is it a sin even if I'm not able to do it? So we have some examples over here that would help understand why would someone think about sin, commit it or not commit it, and how is it becoming a sin or not becoming a sin. So here we have from the book of Gunahane Kabire, which is The Greater Sins by